Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. Super, super special guest all the way from the UK, Adrian Swinsko. Now, Adrian, if you do not know who this person is, I mean, if you're in the CX community, you know who Adrian is, but Adrian has been in the CX space and building businesses large and small, customer-focused businesses large and small for over 25 years. He's an author, CX visionary, Forbes contributor, speaker, investor, advisor, and an aspiring punk, CX punk too, and he's got a very, very cool podcast to that name as well. So, Adrian, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's great to have you here.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me. It's an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thanks so much. All right, so you know we were wrapping a little bit before the show. You know, you've been in the CX space for a long while. I have as well. But how did you get into? Tell our listeners a little bit of like. How did you kind of get into this space and really get that bug and start from there?
Oh, crumbs. Let me give you the kind of the rather long, short answer to that. So, because it might explain a little bit of my experience and kind of how eclectic it's been. So I don't really feel like I've had a career. I've had a journey.
Yeah.
So I started... kind of working my working life. I trained as an economist and also as an educator. I did both here in the UK, but also overseas in the Middle East. Got to the end. That was over the course of the 90s. Got to the end of the 90s. Flirted with the idea of becoming a professional economist. Sort of applied for PhDs and all that sort of stuff. Had offers of scholarships in places and everything like that. Just decided that I didn't really want to run that PhD marathon. Didn't think I had the stamina for it. So switched and took an MBA and then switched into kind of corporate life, worked for a couple of corporates, namely like the Financial Times Group and like the Royal Dutch Shell Group, where I was doing things like building new propositions within a corporate environment. Mm-hmm. And that's where, and it would just continue a theme of developing new things, new kind of propositions. And I've always had, you know, customer employee value at their heart. Mm-hmm. Left corporate space in 2004 following a bit of a restructure in Shell. They offered me an operational job and I went, what? that doesn't fit for me. So I kind of ended up deciding I wanted to, you know, to row my own boat. For a few years did a bunch of freelance consulting, consultancy, did some corporate venturing, did some sort of at-risk sort of work, nearly bought a steel company, but that's another kind of story.
Wow.
I would have been sat here smoking a cigar with a big top hat, kind of like being kind of like...
A robber baron kind of thing,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, crumbs. I think I've been saved from my own fate. But then coming around about 2007, 2008, I quite liked the idea of, you know, working independently. But I could see where the market was going, and I see that actually you could, if you want to work independently, you have to build kind of reputation, right? And for me, that at that time, that meant kind of you had to build digital reputation, like a digital footprint.
Yeah.
And so I started writing about stuff on my own kind of blog, my own website. And I was writing about just sort of general things, you know, marketing, business strategy, all that type of stuff. And I got really boring very quickly. And so I had to figure out that I needed to write about something I cared about or I didn't like and I wanted to change. Hmm. And I had this epiphany. I was thinking, oh, you know, I really don't like bad service. Now, that doesn't make me kind of any different to anybody else, but that was kind of really stuck out for me. Because what also struck me was this idea that it frustrated me that organizations can get in the way of their people doing a good job a lot of the time.
Oh, totally.
And I thought, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this on, not in search of a truth or a solution, but just to start researching it, start kind of exploring it around what are different ways that we things that we can do that can enable the delivery of great service and great experience, both inside and also kind of outside organizations. So that was sort of 2008. Then over the course of the last sort of like 12 years, I've published three books. So self-published one in 2010. Published another one in 2016 with Pearson called How to Wow. Published Punk CX in 2019. Started my own podcast 10 years ago. So I was podcasting before it was cool.
Were you like number 10 podcast in the world? I mean, 10 years ago, who was doing podcasting?
Right? Well, yeah, it's like before people. It was cool, and now it's cool, and I'll probably still be podcasting away after it's no longer cool. 8 years ago, I got approached by Forbes to write a column for them because they liked what I was doing on my own blog. Yeah. And so I've been doing that. So I use that as a halo of credibility in many ways. Yeah. Also, it forces me to up my game in many ways because it's like a big brand and it's an absolute honor to write for them.
Yeah,
I didn't write enough to get paid, but that's fine. They seem to just let me alone and that's it. That's cool for me. And over that period, it's allowed me to establish this footprint and this reputation in that sort of service and experience sort of space that has allowed me to develop this kind of portfolio of kind of work that is either advisory work or speaking and writing work or something in the middle, which is sort of like either capacity building or to facilitate decision making, primarily through things like kind of workshops and stuff.
Cool.
And so I'm an explorer, man. I mean, like I feel like I'm just getting started. But I love it. I mean, I get paid to do stuff I like with people I like. I mean, what's not to like?
You know? Yeah. That's awesome. That's an awesome story. And I can't believe, you know, podcasting for 10 years. I mean, just that's an incredible milestone in and of itself.
Thank you, man.
I mean, that's so cool.
Can I tell you that I fervently believe that through my podcast makes me smarter.
Oh, I totally agree with that, by the way.
And everything I do on my blog or my podcast or Forbes column and stuff, I've always thought about it this way. I've always said it's my public thinking digital notebook. It doesn't have to be right. I'm not necessarily selling anything.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking out loud. So it's like an open research institute of one with a bunch of people that come in that share some stuff with me.
I love that. You know, it's funny because, you know, someone asked me actually on the podcast, they're like, so what are you getting out of the podcast? It was like after we had recorded. And I was like, you know, honestly, this has been the biggest growth and learning hack of like all time.
Cool.
And that's how I describe the podcast. And like, you know, you've been in the CX space for a while. Same here. You go in like, yeah, I've got all the answers. I know what I'm doing. I can know what questions I can ask. We can wrap back and forth. And all of a sudden I have some people like starting off on the show and I'm like, I don't know a thing. Well, I know some stuff, but like, man, I've got so much to learn still, even after 20 years of doing it. So yeah, it's a growth and learning hack for me. So I totally agree with you. You're totally spot on. So look, you know, if you think about it, you started to, you know, blog and write about this stuff, you know, 10, 12 years ago, you've got all this, this media. How has it changed for you? Cause it has changed a lot too, right? Let's even in the last 5 years, let alone 10.
Oh, completely. I mean, technology aside, I mean, the acceleration in technology and the development of technology over the last 10, 12 years has been quite incredible. But I think that's the way I find myself is the same where I find myself right now and what's kind of changed. It's not very different to where I was kind of like a few years ago where, funny story, I was asked to go and speak at an event in Barcelona. Now, this was happening kind of one day, so I went to the airport and I flew out kind of like flying out the evening before, and I was going to arrive, you know, late evening, time to get to the hotel, time to go to bed, get up in the morning, speak first thing, blah, blah, not a problem. Problem is, I got to the airport and the plane broke. So I'm supposed to fly at like 7:30 and the plane broke, and they were like, well, we can't fix the plane, so we have to source a plane from somewhere else. So they had to literally fly a plane in from somewhere else in Europe.
Oh, my gosh.
To come, to go to Barcelona to pick up the people in Barcelona that were supposed to come back to London, flew them back, got them off, and then put us on the plane. So we didn't leave till just after 12. I got into my hotel about 4:30 in the morning.
Ugh.
Right? Then I had to speak about like 9:00 in the morning. which was I did on fueled by caffeine and pure adrenaline. But then I had to do a panel afterwards. And funnily enough, I was sat in the panel like a zombie. And somebody asked me, the MC asked me, so we'd like to kind of get a view on, you know, what does the future hold? Where are we at right now? Where does the future hold for kind of a CX? And we were like going, oh, we're going to go to Adrian first. And I'm like going, oh my God.
Well, like, oh, we've all been there. So we've all been there.
But here's the thing that occurred to me right in that very moment, which I've remembered. And I still, like I said, you know, I'm excited for the future, but frustrated at the progress that we've made. Or the lack of progress that we've made. And I think that's kind of like it become a continuous sort of thing. It's one of the reasons why I wrote the Punk CX book. Because, see, there's all this energy and all this investment and all this enthusiasm in the space, but I haven't seen as much improvement as I would like to have seen, particularly from a customer outcomes perspective. And so I'm excited by the possibility, but I'm frustrated by kind of some of the stuff I've still to be done.
I do know what you mean. So, I mean, even if you think about the proliferation of a technology, you've got artificial intelligence, machine learning kind of coming to the space. Now, like, you know, employee experience kind of blowing up as well. You still have bad experiences. I mean, regularly. It's not like once in a while. It's still regularly, which is incredibly frustrating and demotivating as a customer, but also someone in this work. So I hear you. I do know where you're coming from on that. 100%.
So I think the kind of frustration for me is just like a residual kind of thing, and I think that's more to do with me being trying to have an advocate for change and really optimistic, and I believe that people can do better. And actually, I think there's a desire to do kind of better, but then a whole bunch of other things get in the way. But you know, I'm generally an optimist about that. I think we're making kind of progress, but I'm just like frustrated at the pace of change.
Yeah, it definitely isn't quick enough. If you think about though, those companies that have accelerated the work or the discipline in their own organizations, what differentiates those companies versus others? Where, you know, and I've got a lot of friends in the UK. They're all posting about their poor experiences and what's going on all the time, and I get a kick out of them because the flip side here on this side, and you know, in the East Coast of the US, it's the same thing. But there are great experiences that I have and brands that I love, and because they're delivering a consistent. But like, what do you think in your work, even what do you see that differentiates those companies versus that don't maybe get it?
So I actually think, I mean, that you just mentioned a word there, which I think is one of the absolute keys. And that is that sort of consistent.
Yeah.
Now, I have a poster which is just there, which is Love Basics, kind of in the corner, the green one with the red, the red heart. And I think there's this thing around being brilliant at the basics. And I don't think enough people are brilliant at the basics. They don't really understand what those are. But here's the thing. Most of the leaders that we quote in this kind of like space have tended to have figured that out. It's like a secret hiding in plain sight, right? And the thing about it is that it takes time and effort and discipline and commitment to do that. Because they also understand the payoff. The payoff being that as human beings, we don't like risk, uncertainty, failure, disappointment, all that sort of stuff. In fact, neurologically, hardwired into our lizard brain, we value the avoidance of those things between 5 and 17 times more than any joy, surprise, or delight initiative, right? It's all to do with our survival instinct. So when people kind of lock onto that, log into it, then the basics just go, take on huge importance. And so, but being able to deliver that easy, consistent, responsive kind of service or experience is a thing that just builds this massive foundation of trust and reliability and loyalty and all of those different sort of really, really good stuff. But the problem is that the leaders get this. The leaders aren't flaky. They get this. And they get it so much that they double down on that sort of stuff. And that gives them a massive foundation on which to build these other delightful experiences.
So let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, what do you think they're doing then differently to create that consistency, to build that trust? I mean, you know, at least for myself and my own work, you know, you've got to understand your customer. You've got to have a robust VOC. You've got to forget metrics. Who cares? Mm-hmm. So actually, when this goes onto YouTube, you'll be able to see the sign behind you, which I can't repeat. Otherwise, Apple will, you know, slap me on the wrist. Having those systems in place to be able to democratize, get those insights out to people, having design and design thinking behind that, creating or co-creating sort of those solutions, whether it's digital or non-digital experiences. Are those companies doing all that? Are they doing anything differently as well that you're seeing?
I think they're starting to get there. I mean, I think there's, but it's for too often, you know, and for too long, you know, I saw data, I think, from last year or the late 2019 that backed kind of this up. So there's an old piece of research which showed that I think it's about 60% or north of 60% of all requests for help, whether they're phone calls or emails or chats or whatever, into a contact center or a help desk come about because people couldn't find the answer that they're looking for on your website.
Yeah.
Right? And that was data from like 7 or 8 years ago. I saw the same sort of data that had produced the same number from about 2019. And in systems thinking speak, that would be called failure demand, right? The organization is responsible for all of that demand, right? And that, if you think about systemically, think about how that does, it makes people wait. It makes people kind of like not kind of have to go do make in. Well, incur extra effort to solve the kind of the problem, which then decreases satisfaction and so on and so forth. So I think some of the ones that really get this and think about the basics, they understand that. They understand that they are responsible for doing those things and helping people find those kind of things. And they keep iterating and experimenting and testing kind of like new initiatives or new kind of like forms of kind of content or help or whatever to help customers self-serve. Now, that spotlight has gone from like this big to like this big kind of over the last kind of 10 months, right? Now, because it's had to with this massive kind of like move to a distanced existence and remote working and all those sort of things. There's many people that are catching up, but there's many people that are already kind of there, and they're just almost like building on their lead because they've already got a good base. And so I think you're spot on that they use VOC, but also a broader sense of VOC. It's not just survey data. Yeah. It's kind of ops data. It's process data. It's employee data. It's all of that sort of stuff.
Fully integrated,
Because VOC is like many people kind of think about it as being it's this, which is therefore it's about platforms and what customers tell you. But we all know, you and I both know, that only a certain percentage, or a very small percentage of people, have a predilection towards always completing surveys.
100% correct.
And it's completely partial, right? And it's generally at this end of the scale or this end of the scale, and it misses out this much in the middle.
Oh, so more than that. More than that even.
Okay, that way. I'm trying to get it on the screen. But you know what I mean? So you're only getting a partial picture.
Yeah.
You're not getting the full thing. So you have to bring in other sort of elements to build out that kind of picture. I mean, I think there's a concept called silent complaints. I don't know if you're familiar with
it.
Which is completely speaks to that. So, you know, for your listeners, there's a example that I always kind of use, which people go, "Oh yeah, I've done that." Which is like, imagine you've gone to a restaurant that you've been wanting to go to for a while, you've kind of booked a table, you're looking forward to it, you're excited, you go there, you walk in, service is great, you're greeted, shown your table, music, ambience, brilliant, smells wafting through from the kitchen, it's all wonderful. Service, food, tastes great, brilliant, all, they're smashing it out of the park. And then you get up and you go to the bathroom and the bathroom is a complete mess, right? So then you're going to go, oh, kind of like, I'm not sure now. Or like maybe a completely different scenario. You go there and you're like going, it just doesn't meet your sort of expectations, right? And you kind of go, well, it's not great, but not bad enough for me to complain. But if, and I'm not going to post on social media, but if anybody asks, I'll be like, meh.
The loo is really weird.
Yeah, you just, you'll just be like going, what was it like? And you go, meh. And you're like, that's it, it kills it. But then if you look at the, how all that multiplies out, like, what is it, for one actual complaint, there might be 25 silent complaints?
I've even seen more, that number higher, actually. I've seen up to 200, depending on the study. So somewhere between 25 and 200, though. Yeah.
So I always kind of say to people, and I have this example that I use in one of the books. I spoke to a guy called Casey Smith, who runs this American company called Big Ass Fans. I love their name because they make big ass fans, right? And they've got an ass as part of their logo, which is brilliant. A donkey, in other words,
not a gluteus maximus.
And what they did is Casey employed somebody to go out and ask all of their customers a question that got something along the lines of, is there anything that we do, however slight or however small, that annoys or irritates you? And that could be anything across our whole process.
Yeah.
And his job was to come and bring that back to the firm so they can decide what to do.
Yeah.
They did that relentlessly, and they got more and more sort of like feedback as they went out and spoke to customers. One, it built better relationships with customers, but it got this fantastic insight, these tiny little things that don't fit into surveys, don't fit into emails. Guess what? That business grew sixfold in about 7 years by doing just that, by building on their reputation and building on their experience, but did it relentlessly.
And getting rid of those little just nudges, right, that people just couldn't stand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year, the year before last, because it was at a restaurant, I had the opportunity to sit down with Fred Reichold, who started MPS, right? And he said, you know, he's going like, you know, MPS 2.0 and his whole thing. And he said, he's like, I'm almost to the point where he's like, and I think that they've introduced this already, but he's like, anybody who enters a 9 or 10, so a promoter, ask them, what is the one thing that we can improve? He's like, the reason for that is because you've got dedicated people who are buying your product. It's the ones who are invested, who are really loyal, that actually will tell you, you know what, this one thing really annoys me. So back to your point, I don't complain about it because I love eating at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. But you know what? If you really actually fixed up the bathroom, I'd be going out to social media and not really saying what, you know, or saying like, you've got to come here and eat, right?
Sure.
So I love that concept of like, how do you use your promoters and the folks that are uber loyal, right? So again, back to that question into the big ass fan company is like, what is that one thing that we can change? An important question.
But here's the thing. Again, we go back to, I'm fascinated by psychology and some of the things that get in the way of us doing this sort of stuff. And I think we get stopped by doing that by a couple of things. One is that the irrational fears that we have. Like, you remember back in the day when people didn't survey the customers?
Sure.
Because they thought...
Still happens today.
Yeah. We can't survey our customers because they'll all start shouting at us.
Yeah.
You're like going, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, customers are not stupid. You know, they spend their money in kind of wise ways. Most of them don't have a lot of it. So it's a finite resource and they're pretty careful about it. So there's that gets in the way of them going out and seeking these things because they're scared about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that they dismiss it as being insignificant. And I think, well, that's kind of weird because then you end up getting into this Jekyll and Hyde syndrome where people wake up in the morning and they're a normal human being that includes being, you know, a father or a mother or a son or a daughter or kind of whatever, as well as a citizen and a professional or, you know, blah, 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 customer and so on and so forth. Then they cross the threshold of the company and they lose all this kind of like stuff and they turn into this corporate monster that loses sight of everything that they are. And I'm thinking, how the hell does that work?
I do wonder in the face of COVID, you know, I'm on this kind of mission of just, you know, are we asking people the right questions anymore?
Mm.
Right? The skill set, the stuff, the tools in your toolbox are still the same, right? Those shouldn't change. But, you know, I got a survey just the other day, actually. from a company. I won't mention their name, but I was like, why would you ask me that? I'm like, what would you think that it's even appropriate given, like, you know, I've been locked in my house for a year, you know, like, do you guys know what's going on? So I'm like, I'm like, are we even asking the right questions of people? And I don't think a lot of companies have changed that survey. If they're surveying, okay, fine. Even if they're doing nothing with it, or they complain about it, or they're scared about it, like, are we even asking the right questions anymore? I wonder if, like, I'd appreciate your thoughts on that.
So I think there's still a lot of people that are, they're asking the customers for feedback, but there are a lot of people are still doing it as a checkbox exercise. And sort of it's like, set it and leave it. And I'm of the mind that if you're not going to listen and you're not going to do anything about it, then actually that's worse than not asking at all.
It is.
Right? And so I think there's probably a lot of kind of what you're kind of talking about might be people falling into that sort of space, like they've said it and left it. And that's just a waste. It's a waste of everybody's time and effort, and it's a waste of resources from the business's perspective. I think also there's also kind of like a set of those organizations that they're ashamed to admit that they're kind of unconnected to their folks.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like that response, your response, your reaction to that sort of speaks volumes. A bit like going, you don't know me.
You should. You have plenty of data on me.
Yeah.
But
you don't know me.
You don't know me. That's right. Hey, let's bring it at the top of the podcast. We started getting into technology a little bit. Mm-hmm. You've got massive platforms out there, Medallia, Qualtrics, and Moment, Sweet CX. I mean, you name it. What are your thoughts on these platforms and how are they shaping the game a little bit?
So I think that, let me kind of like be careful of my words. So I think there's many of these platforms that are doing absolutely stellar work because they're advocating for some of the right things. People thinking about the right sort of things, and they're enabling a lot of the things. I think what the kind of platforms are also kind of realizing, though, is that what technology can do and the nature of the game is changing. That in of itself can be a little bit confusing because it's like they become a bit, it feels like they can become a bit of a moving target. And particularly if you go into that sort of voice of the customer sort of space, then, you know, some of them are still in that sort of like pure survey and listening sort of space, and it's external and not kind of bring it into the internal. And then, as we say, covering that spectrum, there's some of them are starting to do that and trying to bring it all together and build a bigger sort of picture. I think for me, I think some of the stuff that's more exciting in that sort of space are the people that are going a little bit further and trying to kind of move into that orchestration sort of space, which I think is next gen, kind of like where you put voice of the customer and customer journey sort of like stuff together, when you can with a fat analytics and orchestration kind of like thing. So I think that's cool, but to get to that sort of stage requires that you've got to have your house in order, right?
Yeah, I mean, your technology needs to talk to each other, right?
Yeah, and your data is all going to be in the places that kind of like you can plug into, right, from all sorts of different places, and that's still a big ask for a lot of people.
Yeah,
and so I think the possibilities are all kind of like there, and particularly when you start putting, you start building in other kind of platforms which will allow you to do really clever decisioning and kind of recommendations, which then starts to leverage kind of some of the, you know, the AI technology, and you start getting into, you know, building in next best action type of kind of recommendations, depending on kind of where, what sort of customer you're dealing with and where they're at in their, in their journey. So I think there's some fantastic possibilities.
Yeah.
But I think it can be problematic. But I think more fundamentally, I think that many organizations fall into the trap of thinking about what the technology can do for them rather than figuring out what they want to do and why.
Yeah. What is my goal?
Yeah. Where am I right now? Where do I need to be, or where do I want to be, and why? Yeah. How does that connect to and enable and support the achievement of my business and corporate objectives?
Yeah.
And therefore, what data and technology do I need to underpin that?
Yeah.
So we end up with kind of like tail wagging the dog rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
And so that's what I mean. And so I think many people end up getting caught in the idea that they buy technology and hoping it's going to solve their problems.
Yeah.
Rather than actually figuring out what is the problem.
Yeah.
And it sort of reminds me of a quote from Einstein, which I've come to love in the last kind of like a few months, where he said, if you gave me an hour to think about a problem, I would spend 55 minutes thinking about the problem and then 5 minutes thinking about the solution.
Yeah, exactly right.
But what we find more often than not is that the flip is what normally happens. That we end up jumping into solutions and figuring out the solutions rather than actually figuring out what the problem is.
So that's, by the way, Einstein is one of my heroes. I'm a huge fan. Actually, my favorite Einstein quote is, the only difference between genius and stupidity is that genius has limits.
Yeah.
So which that. Is like, I mean, it's just, the guy was just brilliant on so many levels. Doing podcasts like this and yourself for a while as well, like I talked to a lot of people. I've in the last couple, like let's say 6 months, I've actually heard stories of like people going to and like implementing these massive platforms, spending seven figures, and then they don't even turn it on, right? Tick the box, right? Mm-hmm. Which is incredible to me. But I'm actually, like you, I'm really excited about the possibility. I'm really hoping these platforms start to figure out how to connect the employee experience and the customer experience data together and start to really drive through that thread. I think that we're probably like 2 or 3 years off on that, but I'm really excited about that potential.
I mean, I think, and this is not the sort of, well, this is the first time I've talked about this in public, but maybe it doesn't really matter. So I think that, so a big shout out to kind of Paul Greenberg, who's a friend of mine and, you know, also a bit of a personal hero of mine. And I remember hearing Paul talk about what he called the kind of the landscape of service.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how on the far end, you end up with preemptive and then proactive, and then you end up with self-service, then enabled, maybe network of experts sort of thing, and then you get agent-assisted mm-hmm. sort of like service, mm-hmm. which means you end up with a kind of that's, it looks like this kind of oval sort of set. I think you're absolutely right in that you end up with, there's another set which kind of mirrors that, which is the employee experience.
Yep.
And you can ask yourself, are there the same dimensions mm-hmm. that sit mm-hmm. on the employee? So is there a preemptive, a proactive, a self-service, an assisted element?
Because
then you end up with the full spectrum of the landscape of service and experience. And I think it's a little bit further off than that. Yeah. I think that in the 3 or 4 years, I think it's a little bit further off, because I think it's going to require bringing a whole bunch of stuff together, and you have to split out kind of what you mean by the employee experience, whether it's operational or kind of either kind of the looking after kind of the employee within the organizational kind of like environment rather than just the pure operational kind of bit. I think that people like Josh Burson are doing some really interesting kind of work in that sort of space, and he's starting to talk about that, but I don't think he's fused it together, but he's talking about pulling all that stuff together in an HR.
Yeah.
Human resources, people kind of focus sort of stuff. But at the operational level, I think we're starting to see people start to play in that sort of space, but it's not really being fully scoped out.
Yeah, I'm dying for that. I've been just doing some thinking around how do maturity models look for from the customer side and from the employee side, and where those intersections start to play out.
Mm-hmm.
So very cool. Hey, let's talk about the podcast a little bit. Like, you know,
okay.
I mean, super cool name, right? I mean, let's just get that out of the way. And I do love the podcast. I'm a subscriber, and I've been listening to it. just even a year ago when I was like, okay, I'm going to start a podcast. Let me see what's out there. And, you know, how far do I need to up my game and get serious about this stuff? And yours is one of them that rises to the top. Like, why did you start the podcast? So you're blogging 10 years ago, you're doing all this stuff, but like, you know, what's driving, and now 10 years in, like what, because like, here's a guy who's been doing it for a year. Like, what's driving you 10 years in? I need to know, just as a podcaster who's a year in.
So, see that kind of poster there?
Yeah.
You know the last kind of word? Metrics?
Yeah.
I don't really pay much attention to metrics.
Yeah.
And what I try and do is I think that I treat my podcast as like my R&D lab.
Love it.
And if I focus on using it as a platform to share ideas and to learn and to expose kind of things that I think are interesting and important in this sort of like space, then I think, and if I think I benefit from myself, or somebody's got like a story that I think is worth kind of like is worth kind of sharing, then that's what I do. So here's the way that I describe my podcast. I think it's a combination of learning, networking, and sort of an indirect kind of marketing kind of reputation building sort of thing. Yeah. So I get to connect with some wonderful people that are doing kind of incredible sort of things. Everything from entrepreneurs to authors to technologists to kind of big execs, you know, all sorts of different people. And yeah, it's hard work.
Yeah.
I think despite the fact that it's hard work and I do it all myself, and sort of edit it, and I will do some highlights of it, and I'll kind of like write it all up and things. And but I think it cements the learning and the understanding of it all, and it's just become a discipline that I've sort of like embraced. I have a tempo that I run at, which is, so I've done over the 10 years, I've just published 375 of them.
Cool.
I really do enjoy kind of meeting the kind of the people. And I think the thing that I find from it, because I don't really focus on the metrics, I'm not a somebody, or rather a bit of an aside. Somebody sent me a note the other day saying, your podcast could be so many different kind of things, and comparing me to all these other things. And I'm like going, yeah, you don't get why a podcast. You're using your frame of what podcasting is and comparing me to that. That doesn't work. That's not, you've basically said I don't have a strategy for that. I'm like going, really? You don't get it. You don't get why I do this. And I know that my podcast is very niche focused. It's quite future focused, and it's a little bit next, but it's also a bit now, but next as well. So it has a very particular audience, and that audience kind of finds it, I think. But what it does is it helps me gather the stories and the data and the insights that helps me kind of like fuel up the future kind of conversations. Yeah. And so whilst it might be hard work and I carry around like a big rucksack kind of sometimes from kind of time, and it sometimes feels like, oh God, I've got another one to do, another one to publish. That's like the discipline, right? It's like being a marathon runner and you wake up in the morning and it's chucking it down with rain.
Yeah. And you're still out there running. Yeah.
You're still out there running. And I think, like I said to you just before we started, is one of the things I realized over the last sort of like 12 months or so, it's almost a bit of a description of what I do and how I do it. I find myself that I'm in service to service.
Yeah.
Which means I show up even when it's hard.
I love that. That's super inspirational. One, the story around why you podcast, because I'm so there with you. I did have a vanity metric that I shared out on social media recently. But I was like, I'm proud of that metric just because who I am, and I've lived internationally and, really I'm thoughtful about other cultures. But if you look at those numbers every day, you will drive yourself flipping crazy. It's not about that at all. And if that's why you're doing it, then you should not do it. Right.
Then you're in the Then you were in the entertainment business.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not in the curation, the problem solving, kind of business.
Yeah, helping yourself and others grow and learn, right?
Yeah. Another. So I'm a bit of a collector of quotes. Another quote that I love is from one of your countrymen, I believe, and I love his name. He's called Zig Ziglar. And he's probably got the most rock star name of anybody who's never a rock star.
Yeah.
And he wrote this book called See You at the Top. And there's a line in that book that says, if you help enough people get what they want, then you'll get what you want. And I think that says it all. So I'm trying to just help.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, generosity without the expectation of reciprocity is, I mean, one of the secrets of life, isn't it?
Right? Well, yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. It does come back. I'm a true believer in that, and I've seen that happen for myself. So so all right, last question for you before we get on get the weekend going for you here. Where do you go get inspiration from outside of the podcast and all that stuff, because we've covered that a little bit, but do you have other sources that you go to inspiration from?
I have crumbs. I have like this hose pipe of resources that kind of keeps coming at me, and most of the time I get soaked and I don't really pay attention to much of it, but it's quite eclectic in that I'll try and spot things. One of the things I really like, because it helps me uncover sort of stuff, which is an underutilized resource by many people, is I use Google Alerts.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, if you Google Alerts, and you can put in search terms,
yeah,
and then you can. I have a set of about probably 10, maybe 12 of them.
Cool.
That send me on like a twice a week or like once a week.
Yeah.
And it just sends me this list of kind of like stuff that I go through and go, oh, cool, and that points me to, and that might be everything ranging from psychology to consumer behavior.
Yeah.
To experience, to service, to retention, to loyalty, all these different and random kind of things, as well as a whole bunch of other sources that I just collect around the kind of place. But then I also look to other kind of people and other things. Like I'm inspired by, the thing about kind of heroes that I have that make me think about things. There's just like stories of stuff. I mean, I'm inspired by people like, I don't know, let's say Gandhi and kind of Mandela, because they showed what it means to live a life of service. I'm inspired by people like, John Spadden Lewis, who runs the John Lewis, who set up the John Lewis Group and kind of Waitrose and things in the UK, and then gave it away to his employees. Because that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I'm inspired by like people like Tony Hsieh, may he rest in peace, and what he tried to do. Or like say Dan Price of Gravity Payments across in Seattle.
Yeah.
And his approach,
great story.
His approach to kind of paying everybody a minimum wage so they can bring the best version of themselves to work and just take all of their life challenges away from them and then look at kind of what happened. Lots of people like that. And then, writers like Seth Godin or Dave Trott or all sorts of different people and comedians and all sorts of kind of like stuff. Yeah. I mean, the thing that I've found is that I don't switch that interest filter off very often. It's always kind of on in the background because it's just part of kind of who I am. So I'm always looking for stuff. That doesn't mean to say I don't relax. It's just it's a habit that's kind of like it's like having a spider's net and I'm catching these flies and then putting them in my pocket. So I'm like, oh, I'll look at that later. and so that's, I'm always on the lookout for different angles and things, and I think that I've always liked to try and join the dots, and in my curiosity fuels this kind of like gathering of stuff and then going, does that thing make sense?
Yeah, well, you got to collect the dots like you're doing to be able to connect them, so that's awesome. Adrian, thanks so much for being on the show. I feel like I should buy you a beer at the pub. If I'm in the UK, you know, when all this stuff kind of blows over, would love to look you up and I don't know, whatever your drink of choice is. I shouldn't assume that you're going to have a beer.
Guinness. But,
all right, let's do it.
You are definitely on.
Yeah, that's an easy one. Thanks for being on the show. It's wonderful to have you. Fantastic conversation.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure, Bill, and an absolute honor. I'm in debt to you.
No. Gosh, it goes the other way, man. All right, everybody. Fantastic show. Thanks for listening.
We're out. Talk to you soon, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out. We'll be right back.